Way back in 1965, Jackie DeShannon recorded a song that was written by Hal David and Burt Bacharach entitled, "What the World Needs Now is Love." Others have since recorded it, and it's become very popular. That original song peaked at number 7 on the music charts here in the United States. In Canada, it went all the way to number 1. And people still recognize that tune today because of TV commercials and different ways in which it's been used. 2 years after that, the Beatles recorded a single called "All You Need Is Love." And it topped sales charts in Britain, the United States, and many other countries. It became kind of an anthem for the counterculture's embrace of flower power philosophy. And again, on some of your oldies stations, you'll still hear this song being played. All these years later, despite all of our advances in science and technology that have tried to make life easier and better, these two songs still ring true. Our world still needs love. And when you break it all down, love really is all we need. In fact, a couple decades after those two songs were recorded, there was another hit single that came out that said, "I want to know what love is. I want you to show me." The world is crying out, "What is love? Will somebody please show me what love is?" Now, all these popular songs merely echo what the Bible has taught for centuries. Peter wrote in 1 Peter 4:8, "Above all, love each other deeply." The New Living Translation puts that, "Most important of all, continue to show deep love for each other." You see the emphasis there? Above all, most important of all is love. Paul says the same thing in 1 Corinthians 13. We call it the love chapter. And he talks about the supremacy of love. The final verse of that chapter says, "Now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love." Not just great, the greatest. Above all others, love. The Apostle John wrote in 2 John verses 5 and 6, "I'm not writing you a new command, but one we've had from the beginning. I ask that we love one another. And this is love, that we walk in obedience to his commands. As you have heard from the beginning, his command is that you walk in love." Now, some of you hear that and you say, "Wait a minute, John. You know, a little bit of circular reasoning here, right? You know, to love is to obey the commands, and to obey the commands is to love." But it just shows how intricately tied together these concepts are. In order to love, we must obey. And in order to obey, we must love. And this isn't just the opinion of these three men either. In the passage that was read earlier for us from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 12, we hear it from the words of our Savior himself. In Mark chapter 12, the Jewish leaders are trying to trip Jesus up. They're trying to get him to say something that they can use against him. We're very familiar with this now because it's presidential election season, right? And I think that news reporters love to have the opportunity to have something to write about. And so they'll try to trip up these candidates with tricky questions or get them to make a gaffe so that they can put it in the papers and make fun of them. And Jesus is facing that same thing. And so we read in verse 28, "One of the teachers of the law came and heard them debating. Noticing that Jesus had given them a good answer, he asked him, 'Of all the commandments, which is the most important?' The most important one, answered Jesus, is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And the second is this: Love your neighbor as yourself. There is no greater commandment than these. Now, I want you to understand, when Jesus was asked this question, it wasn't just a simple multiple choice, you know, A, B, C, or D, none of the above. There were 613 commandments in the law, according to the rabbis. 365 of them were negative: thou shalt not. 248 of them were positive. And one of their favorite exercises was debating, what's the greatest? What is the greatest commandment? Now, you'll find people today that do this, right? What's the greatest song of all time? What's the greatest movie of all time? What's your favorite color? What's your favorite, whatever. They even have an acronym out, the GOAT, right? Now, I remember years ago, you didn't want to be the GOAT. You know, if you were the GOAT, that means you probably lost the game. You did something stupid and made yourself look foolish. That's the GOAT. Now, GOAT stands for greatest of all time. And people are debating, who's the greatest football, basketball, baseball, hockey player? Who's the greatest team? Who's the greatest this, that, and the other? The rabbis used to sit around and debate, what's the greatest commandment of the law? And so this man asks Jesus. Now, I don't exactly know what was in his heart. Maybe he really did want to know what Jesus' opinion was. My guess is, though, given the context, he was hoping that Jesus would choose one of those commands and say, this is the greatest, because in doing so, he would alienate everybody else. You know, if you say the greatest film is this, then everybody who disagrees with that now is going to either argue with you or not talk to you anymore. And I think that's what the Jewish leaders are trying to do. They're trying to drive a wedge in between Jesus' followers. Ah, he didn't pick your commandment. But Jesus did not duck the question. He actually gave an answer. And he said, the most important one is this: Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. He's quoting from Deuteronomy 6:4. In the Jewish culture, this is called the Shema. That's the first Hebrew word in that verse. It means hear. Listen. Listen, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. This was a confession of faith among the Jews. They said it every morning and every evening. To this day, synagogue services begin with that verse. So it was crucial to every Jew, and nobody could argue against the importance of it. But then he went on to include the next verse, which is to love God with everything you are. Then Jesus added to that another commandment from the law: love your neighbor as yourself. And I think people are really surprised when they hear where that one comes from. It's from Leviticus. Oh yeah, everybody's favorite book of the Old Testament. Leviticus 19:18, love your neighbor as yourself. And so all you need is love. Now you say, hold on, Jesus. They asked you, what is the greatest commandment? You gave them two, didn't you? I mean, those are two different commands. But I want you to see how Jesus summarized this. There is no commandment, singular, greater than these. These two are actually one. The command is to love. Love God, love one another. And as we're going to see, you can't do one without the other. So it truly is one commandment. This is the greatest commandment. Love God, love others. So why is it that we as humans, and particularly we as Christians, have such a difficult time with this? The world is full of hurting, needy people. Many in our culture feel alienated. They feel disconnected. They feel alone. They feel like nobody is there for them. They feel unloved. Many people feel alienated from God and from His Word. And they also feel separated from each other. They feel empty. They feel unloved and alone. And we, the Church of Jesus Christ, has the answer. We have what the world needs. When the world cries out, I want to know what love is. I want someone to show me. We can do that. We know what love is. We have the love of God in our hearts. And yet, the world still needs love. The world seems to be falling apart, and the church seems to be getting more and more irrelevant. And I think you see a reason why in a poll that was taken by the Barna Group. 91% of unbelievers surveyed felt the church was not sensitive to their needs. 91%. That's 9 out of 10 of the folks out there think we're out of touch. Think that we are not sensitive to their needs. And if that's not bad enough, 74% of Christians feel the same way. They feel that the church is not sensitive to their needs. They're not feeling the love. Apparently, we've missed the boat. How can we do it? I mean, it's really not complicated, is it? Could Jesus have made it any simpler? Love? Love is all you need. And to put it bluntly, I think the answer comes into we've been so concerned with being right, we forgot what it means to love. I mean, for the most part, and I'm going to speak here of Bible teaching and preaching churches, Bible believing Christians, you know, we hold the right view on sin, we embrace the right concepts of truth, we proclaim the right steps to salvation. But if we don't do it from a heart of love, it doesn't connect. It's very cold. And while it may be orthodox, it may be absolutely correct, if there's no love, it falls flat. And I think that's why so many church members are hurting and unfulfilled. I think that's why so many people avoid church altogether. The great commandment is to love God and to love others. And that forms the true identity of those who are called His church. Love must be at the very heart of what we say and what we do. Jesus said that Himself. In John chapter 13, this is the night before He was to go to the cross. He's meeting with His disciples. And in verse 34, He says, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, that you love one another." That's the badge of the Christian. You want to know how people can identify us as followers of Jesus? This is it. But we've substituted other things, haven't we? By this, all men will know that you are Christians if you carry your Bible everywhere you go. Make sure it's right on top so that everybody can see it. All men will know that you're Christ's followers when you go to church every Sunday, even when it's 11 below zero. Right? All men will know that you are Christ's followers when you can recite many passages out of the Scripture, when you take a stand against all the wrongs of society. That's how we think people will know we are Christians, and that's not what Jesus said. And I want you to notice something. Jesus did not even say, "By this all men will know that you're my disciples if you love God." He didn't say that, did he? No, he said, love one another. Why? Because compared to loving one another, loving God's a piece of cake. I mean, let's face it. What's the biggest problem with the church? It's full of people. Right? You know? It's like that old Peanuts cartoon where Linus says, "I want to be a doctor." Lucy says, "You can't be a doctor. You don't love mankind." He says, "I love mankind. It's people I can't stand." You know, that's the truth. You know, we're people. We're flawed. We're sometimes hard to love. But when we love each other, that's how people know we follow Jesus. Think back to the early church. Think back to the first century. They didn't have buildings that proclaimed that it was a church. They didn't have great sound systems. They didn't have great music programs. They didn't have state-of-the-art technology to wow people into the kingdom of God. And yet, in less than a generation, they turned the world upside down. How did they do it? Through love. They loved one another. And that love is magnetic. When people see a group of people that really care about each other and they support each other and they're willing to forgive each other and they walk through the tough times and they weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice, they're willing to help one another and be generous with each other, there's something very appealing about that. But when they find a group of people that can't agree on the color of the carpet or the paint to put on the walls, when they can't decide on which version of the Bible or even which hymnal to sing out of, when you always find things to fight about and there's all this, you know, gossip and nitpicking going on, who wants to be a part of that? How will the world know we are Christ followers? When we love each other. Because that's the greatest thing. That's the greatest commandment. It's love. Loving God, loving each other. Let's not get so caught up in correct belief and correct behavior. I mean, that's what the Pharisees were doing. That we forget to love God and love each other. Warren Wiersbe writes, "We do not live by rules but by relationships. A loving relationship to God that enables us to have a loving relationship with others." And he's absolutely right. The question is, are we? Is that who we are? So as we continue this question, why church? One answer to that question is because of the great commandment. Because I submit to you that there is no better place to fulfill the great commandment than within the local church. And I believe there's three ways in which we are to love, according to the Scriptures. First, we are to love totally. All our being, we are to love. You go back to Mark 12, the passage that was read earlier, verse 30. How many times does the word all appear? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. Four times, Jesus uses that word all. That is how we love God, with every facet of human personality. Heart speaks of our emotions. Soul, I believe, speaks of the will by which we choose. The mind speaks of our intellect, and the strength speaks of our body. What the soul chooses, the body does, and it's very much put together. So we are to love God with the totality of our being. I mean, it's one thing to claim that we love God, but it's another thing to demonstrate it. Everything that we think, everything we say, everything we do. And that means that nothing comes before God. If we love God totally, then He comes first. Like Abraham, we must be willing to sacrifice anything if the Lord wants us to. We read in 1 John 5:21, "Dear children, keep yourself from idols." And we think, got that one. I don't have a statue that I bow down to. You know, there's nothing that I worship like that. So no problem there. Until you read it in the New Living Translation. And it says, "Dear children, keep away from anything that can take God's place in your hearts." Huh. Okay, now it's a whole other story. Now we're not talking about some statue that you bow down to. It can be anything. And in fact, it can be a good thing. Yeah, it can be my spouse. It can be a child. It can be my parents. It could be a sibling. It could be a friend. It can be my career. It could be my car. Oh, man, that's getting close to home. Right? Anything that comes before God is an idol. And we've got to be aware of that. Idols can be anything in our hearts, our minds, or our lives that is elevated above God. Any object of devotion that distracts us from Christ. Any sin that separates us from reconciliation and intimacy with Him. Any good work that we try to perform to try to gain His favor, which we really only receive by grace through faith. Any person that we adore more than Him. Any truth that we prefer to God's inspired word. None of these things are to come before God. Christ and Christ alone should be the object of our priorities, our passions, and our pursuits. Everything else needs to take second place to this intimate, obedient, loving relationship with Him. Now, in Mark 12:30, Jesus answered the man's question, "Love God with all your being, love God totally," but then He went on to say, "Love your neighbor as yourself." And by doing this, He's connecting the vertical, love God, with the horizontal, love each other. To claim to love God while not loving people, or vice versa, is a contradiction. The two necessarily go together. To love God is to passionately pursue His glory with your whole being. And to love your neighbor is to decide to compassionately and righteously seek his or her well-being. As 1 Peter 1:22 says, "Love one another deeply from the heart." We're to love totally. Second, we're to love truthfully. What do I mean by that? For that, turn to John's first letter, not the Gospel of John, but 1 John, where these concepts of love and truth are often paired. We begin in 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2, verses 3 through 6. John writes, "We know that we have come to know Him if we obey His commands. The man who says, 'I know Him,' but does not do what He commands, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. John doesn't pull punches here. He just says it like it is. But if anyone obeys his word, God's love is truly made complete in him. This is how we know we are in him. Whoever claims to live in him must walk as Jesus did. You see here the connection between truth and love. If we want to be true, we must love. And if we are not loving, we're a liar. The truth is not in us. Back in John 14, again, Jesus speaking to his disciples, if you love me, you will obey what I command. Here, love and obedience are tied together. John echoes this in 2 John. We read a little bit of this earlier. And this is love, that we walk in obedience to his commands. As you've heard from the beginning, his command is that you walk in love. If we want to be true in our confession of faith, we must obey. And if we're going to obey, we must love. If we love, we're going to obey. It just builds on one another. You say, okay, but what does that mean to love others? Well, back in 1 John chapter 3, verse 16, this is how we know what love is. Next time you hear that song on the radio, I want to know what love is. Here's the answer. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah, we talk about the ultimate sacrifice. Oh, that's so wonderful, but how practical is it? I mean, really, how many times do we have a chance to lay down our life for somebody else? But John goes on. Verse 17, if anyone has material possessions and sees his brother in need but has no pity on him, how can the love of God be in him? It doesn't call for sacrificing your life. It may be sacrificing a few dollars, or it might be sacrificing your time, sacrificing your attention, sacrificing your ambitions, your goals, in order to meet another's need. Dear children, he goes on, let us not love with words or tongue, but with actions and in truth. Love must go beyond words. It must go into our actions. And it might just be as simple as meeting a need, physically, materially, emotionally, spiritually. It may involve giving of our material possessions or our time and attention. It can be inconvenient at times. It might be unpopular at times. It may be without return. But to love our neighbor is to decide to compassionately and righteously seek his or her well-being, to put their needs first. That's what love is. It's the opposite of selfishness, and that's why our world is so unaware of it. Because we are so self-centered as individuals. We cry out for love, but we're not seeing it. In the next chapter, chapter 4, John says, dear friends, in verse 7, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. Again, these two concepts come together. When we experience the love of God, we have love for others. We simply reflect his love to those around us. Without his love, we really don't have love to give. And then he concludes in verses 19 to 21, we love because he first loved us. He took the initiative. Sometimes we must do that as well. If anyone says, I love God, but hates his brother, he's a liar. Pure and simple. You cannot love God if you don't love others. Why? For anyone who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he hasn't seen. And he has given us this command, whoever loves God must also love his brother. If you want your testimony to be true, that you love God, then you must love others as well. We can't pick or choose. We can't say, well, I'm going to do this but not that, because it's one command. We are to love. And that leads me to the final point. We are to love together. This is really where the church comes into the picture. Why church? Why do we have to come together? Why can't I just do this by myself? We're to love God. We're to love others. We must be in relationship with others if we're going to love them. We cannot live the Christian life alone. This past week, I came across something that made me stop and think. I had to read it over a couple of times. And it said this: we are biblically incorrect when we assert that God is all we need. Let that sink in. We are biblically incorrect when we assert that God is all we need. Say, wait a minute. I thought God was all that we needed. The author went on to write, yes, God is the ultimate source for meeting all our needs. We understand both biblically and experientially the need for God. Nothing else, not possessions, not position, not success, not even another person, can fill that God-shaped vacuum inside all of us. God and God alone can bring peace and order to the human heart. We know it, we feel it, we live it, we preach it. Simply stated, people need God. Yet, when you look at Genesis 2:18, when God created Adam, he said, "It is not good that man is alone." In fact, it's the first time in the book of Genesis where he says something is not good. Everything else so far is, this is good, this is very good. Now he says, this is not good. What's not good? That man is alone. And understand, this is before sin, okay? So sin hasn't entered the picture yet. And you think, God has placed this perfect human being in a perfect environment, and God is there, right? So what else does Adam need? But, he says, it's not good that he's alone. And God created a companion, a complement for him. You mean God wasn't enough? Well, apparently God didn't think so. Because if so, he'd have left Adam alone. And just think, what would have happened if he'd left Adam alone? Now I probably should duck. But God says, you need each other. It's not enough just to be in relationship with me, because if you're only in relationship with me, you have no opportunity to demonstrate the love that I'm giving to you and that you claim to have for me. You must be connected to others. Now, some will point to Paul's words in Philippians 4:13, I can do everything through him who strengthens me. And conclude that, well, if God was all Paul needed, that's all I need to. Just Jesus in me, I don't need any other believers, I don't need the church, I'm just going to live my life for Jesus, I don't need anybody. But that's not what Paul was saying. We often quote that verse by itself and take it out of its context, because in the very next verse, he says, it was good of you to share in my troubles. Yeah, I can do everything through Christ, but boy, it's sure good to have you here. Paul recognized his need. In many of his letters, he's saying, I need you to pray for me. I need you to support me. I need you to be there for me. Paul was not a lone ranger. He always had his associates with him. He always worked in a team, and he always worked through the church. We need each other. We need to be a part of the body. I'm reminded of Paul's illustration in 1 Corinthians 12, where he likens the local church to the human body. You know, and you got all kinds of different parts of the body, right? And he says, the eye can't say to the ear, I don't need you. The hand can't say to the foot, I don't need you. And we can't do that to each other either. We can't look around at our fellow believers and say, I don't need you people, I'm just going to do it on my own. That is unbiblical. And that's what that guy was saying in that very provocative line I read earlier. We need each other. And the church needs you. The world needs the church to be the church. And it's not just so that we can tell them that they're wrong. They need to see what's right. And they're going to see what's right when they see how we get along. And if we don't get along, what are we showing them? What the world needs now is love. And that's something the church has. The great commandment tells us we are to love God with all that we are, every facet of our being. The way we express that love is that we obey His commands. And how do we obey His commands? We love each other. And that cannot be done in isolation. We were created to have relationships. We love God. We worship God better together than we do alone. We love our neighbors. We love our world better together than we do alone. That's why we need the church. That's why the world needs the church. Now, as much as ever before.